Right, let's go to the Zondo Commission and find out exactly why they feel they need an extension until the end of September. You heard the words there of Deputy Chief Justice Raymond Zondo. Very, very firm, saying that if we're going to do this, we're going to do this properly. And there are some witnesses that they want to hear that they haven't been able to hear. One of those, crucially, President of the country, Cyril Ramaphosa, who was originally scheduled to come on the 29th and 30th of June. That's been postponed. So to get an insight into this and its implications, we're joined by Karen Morn, investigative journalist and legal expert at News 24. Karen, welcome and thanks for your time. How specific was Deputy Chief Justice Zondo in regard to who he's waiting on hearing more from?
We didn't get any insight from the DCJ today when he spoke about these five or six witnesses that the inquiry intends to call. I mean, we can speculate. We haven't heard from people like, for instance, former spy head Arthur Fraser. Ace Magashule had also at one point was indicating that he would go and address some of the Espina-related asbestos case allegations against him that were made in the inquiry. But as far as I know, no overtures have been made towards him. So we don't actually know the identities of these people. And obviously, once we do, we can then have a better sense of how many days in July will be required to hear their evidence and possible cross-examination of them. Remember, the inquiry also hearing applications for cross-examination. So this last period of June is going to potentially end up being potentially quite a full one. And if those witnesses then, people want to cross-examine them, I mean, we don't have a sense of just how much time will be required there.
And in terms of the groans that you're likely to hear from many people saying, oh, they want another extension, and you're familiar with the discourse, we haven't seen anyone go in court, never mind, end up in jail. What are your own thoughts? Because, I mean, you've covered this carefully, and as someone who's devoted a lot of your career to looking at journalistic issues, you would be legal issues, rather. You're very mindful, I'm sure, that these things don't necessarily move fast. But is this one extension too far?
I think, one understands the frustration. It is the most expensive inquiry in South African history. None of the others even come close to it. But, I mean, we did see, 135 million rand spent on an arms sale inquiry that was a complete and utter whitewash, subsequently evaluated, invalidated. And the judges involved there facing JSC hearings in the coming weeks. We also saw the TRC, where there was recommendations for economic remuneration and for prosecutions that never happened. And that failure continues to haunt this country to this day. So we have a very unfortunate political and social pathology of inquiries being brought about to investigate our most deep and damaging on all spheres of life, political, economic, and social scandals, but ultimately having very little impact on the lived realities of ordinary South Africans. That being said, there have been some attempts and successful attempts to recoup money. Some money has been paid back as a consequence of litigation embarked on by the NPA. Ultimately, it's in the NPA's court to now make sure that the very, very substantive evidence that's been gathered by this inquiry is utilized in successful prosecution. But if the DCJ does not present a report ultimately that provides clear insight into what happened here,
yes,
and has far-reaching resonance and is adopted by the president and politically supported by the ruling ANC, South Africans will be very within their rights to say, well, you basically cut open the body politic, exposed to everyone how we're riddled with cancer, and effectively sewn us up and told us to go on our way.
Yes.
And that's not going to leave anyone feeling very good about themselves.
No, and the medical aid and anyone who paid for the operation is likely to complain bitterly. Tell us this, Karen, and it may be a recap for you, but it would certainly be useful for me. What is the status of all this stuff? Because there have been different phases in the process, as I understand it, in regard to the status of testimony given. Where are we now? Can somebody take that report and use it as part of an argument in court? Lay out the legal landscape for us, if you will.
Remember that none of the evidence given, the testimony, is admissible in court. So if
right.
someone is prosecuted as a consequence of that, their testimony can't be admitted. Obviously, if they cross-examined or they face questioning, they can be told, but you said X, Y, Z in the Zondo inquiry, you know, why are you contradicting yourself? The evidence gathered, you know, the hard documentation, pivotal, of course, the Gupta leaks, that is going to be one of the major issues that the inquiry needs to deal with. We know that they obtained the hard drive on which the Gupta leaks was, with a, you know, a lot of money was spent on travel and ensuring a chain of evidence. If they are able to lead the evidence that they promised they would to verify that those emails are in fact authentic, that will be invaluable to the NPA, because the NPA, we know, has struggled, for example, to
yes.
find certain of the money flows evidence related to, for instance, the Istina Dairy Project scam. If they are able to verify that those emails are admissible, you know, are in fact you know, authentic, and they can utilize them in court, it will enable them to pursue a lot more of those money laundering related aspects very, very successfully. But the inquiry left yet to lead that evidence. And as we said before, we don't know who these six witnesses are going to be. I understand that the inquiry will file its application this afternoon, and perhaps we'll get some insight from the DCJ's affidavit as to who exactly he intends to call.
Thanks very much, Karen Morn.